Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners. This is your host, Reverend Reuben Dockery. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight on Blog Talk Radio. Here, you can share your thoughts as well as become informed about very important social issues confronting society today. Please take the time to visit my website at bfcinstitute.com. That's bfcinstitute.com to learn more about our efforts to educate, inspire, and empower disadvantaged families across America to improve the quality of life. The best way to stay in the loop of future broadcasts, times and locations for our traveling educational lecture series, and innovative ideas is to become a BFC Institute seminar participant. You may do so by clicking the Join Our Group tab on the home page. I would be delighted to respond to your suggestions and engage you further in most transformative information. Again, thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hearing from you online.
Welcome again to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful that you can join us tonight, this Thursday, April the 5th, 2018, for another episode. We're grateful that you've joined the Building Families and Communities Institute, was the sponsor for this broadcast, and the intention is to share national-based dialogue and conversation. We also endeavor to go to, as you've heard in the opening promo, various cities with our educational-based lecture and dialogue. And that kind of brings us to where we are tonight, our conversation tonight, because it is vitally important that young people learn the difference between the destructive nature of rioting versus an organized protest. We believe that it's important to pick up from our conversation on this past Tuesday night, where we discussed the powerful conversation about the Holy Week Rising, which was centered around the protests or the rioting that took place after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., which we all know yesterday was the remembrance of the 50th year of that incident. And today we have young people who are ready to go to war, particularly across urban America. But oftentimes if you ask them what is the basis of your protest or what is the basis of your being here, there's no clear answer. There's no beginning or an end that you can associate with their actions. And ultimately many of them become just so enraged and incensed with anger that they just resort to violence and destruction. Sadly, it is historically their neighborhoods that are destroyed. It brings us to our topic tonight. We will look at 102 years in America of incidents of violence involving African Americans and white America. But more importantly, we want to ask ourselves, what is the resolution? And today, what can we tell our young people who have a right to protest? And in order, they can bring some resolution, possibly. But what is it that we do to encourage them, to guide them, and motivate them? So the topic is how to heal after 102 years of social tension in America. All right, hope you can join us. The phone number to give us a call here is 657-383-0944. Typically, we have Pastor Ricky Waller on, who is a regular panelist and who is a sponsor of the show, or a supporter of the show, I should say. And he's an author, and his book is on our webpage at www.bfcinstitute.com. On the back store, if you hover over the Contact Us tab, you'll see the back store tab. And that and some other items that you can purchase or make a contribution, I should say, to our nonprofit. And we will send you a gift to thank you. But particularly every time you do so, or you purchase his book, he make a gift to the nonprofit organization. All right. If you're listening to us for the first time, the format for the show is that I provide a monologue for about 10 to 15 minutes, and after which we will have context for our dialogue for the next about hour and 24 minutes here on Talk Straight. And that's what we intend to do, is to talk straight. So again, I welcome you to give us a call here, 657-383-0944. All we ask is that you, as best you can, keep your conversation relevant to our topic for tonight. And let's show deference to all of our callers. Sometimes we have different opinions, and I don't expect you to necessarily agree with mine. My intent is to provide you as much factual information as possible. And where we can't do it right away, we'll go back and do so, and we'll make sure we put that out there. All right? Having said all of that, we're grateful for all of our listeners. We're going to thank you, Facebook friends, for joining us here. And let me just take a second before I get going to recognize those that may be listening tonight. Mr. Shelton, thank you. Ms. McDowell, thank you. Cole Better, Ms. Majors, I think that's Pastor Sumrall, Joan Sumrall, that may be tuning in to us. Abney, Mario Abney, Cecilia, thank you. McMunt, Peebo McMunt. Looks like Ms. Pittman may be joining us, and Bishop Campbell, and McCarthy, Ms. Ross, McDowell, and Brooks. Thank you all. Feel free to give us a call here and join us live on our dialogue. This is what it's really all about. I grow and I learn when you do so, and I think we all can learn from our collective conversation. 657, that's the number you can call live tonight, 657-383-0944. Okay? With that being said, we're going to go ahead and get into our monologue, and so we can get to our phone lines, and we'll go from there. The topic again is how to heal after 102 years of social tension in America. Second Chronicles, the 7th chapter and the 14th verse reads, "If my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and will heal their land." 1 John 2 and 14 reads, "I have written unto you, fathers, because you have known him that is from the beginning. I have written unto you, young men, because you are strong, and the word of God abideth in you, and you have overcome the wicked one." There is a message and a lesson in the scriptural text just read, and I hope we can parlay that into our conversation tonight. So let me begin by defining what a riot is and providing you context for comparing that to what protest is. I think that will give us some idea about what it means to be organized in the protest. A riot is a violent disturbance of the peace by a crowd of people, an impressively large or varied display of something. Takes part in a violent public disturbance. In other words, you're not the only one that's going to be affected by it. Others will, even if they don't want you there or they don't want you engaging in it, and they don't want to experience the loss that may come as a result of that behavior. All right? Riot. Now, let's listen at what a protest is. A protest is essentially a statement or an action that expresses disapproval or objection to something that takes place or that exists. It's the expression of that objection, what has been said or done. It's a declaration that an individual or group of individuals are seeking some sort of proactive change. So they're going through steps to do so. That's what a protest is. But the difference between the riot and the protest is that the riot is driven by just anger and fury. However, the organized protest is driven by thoughtful action and strategic planning. So one can actually see what the end is going to be in terms of measurable change or resolution to the issue that led to the protest. All right? Now, I'm going to give you, and these come from our lecture series, our traveling lecture series, I'm going to give you a sample of just, we're going to briefly go through about 20 of the very brief histories of events, conflicts that involve whites and blacks in America. I promise you it won't be long. All right, July 1st through the 3rd and August 23rd of 1917. All right. One of the bloodiest race riots in the nation's history took place in East St. Louis, Illinois, on July 1st through the 3rd. A congressional committee reported that 40 to 200 people were killed, hundreds more were injured, and 6,000 driven from their homes. On August the 23rd, a riot erupted in Houston, Texas, between black soldiers and white citizens. Interestingly enough, two blacks and 11 whites were killed in the end. 11 black soldiers were lynched for participating in the riot. Terrible conflict. April through October 19th, 1919. This was the year known as the Red Summer in America, with 26 riots between the months of April and October. Perhaps this was one of the worst outcomes of clashing between Negroes and their white neighbors. 1919, one of the major factors was that we had a wave of European immigrants coming, trying to find their way in America, and we had African Americans migrating from the South largely up northward, trying to find a better life from the plantations. All right? May to June 1st, 1921. We spoke about this previously on a show. In a race riot in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 21 whites and 60 blacks were killed. The violence destroyed a thriving Negro American neighborhood and business district called Black Wall Street. The three blocks, Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, represented the African-American wealth in America at that time, and men were willing to fight to their death to protect it. Now, they lost, but nonetheless, they were willing to protect what they had. June 20th through the 21st, 1943, the Detroit Race Riot, as it was called, claimed 34 lives, including 25 blacks. Other riots occurred around Harlem, New York, Mobile, Alabama, and Beaumont, Texas. Now, let me ask, what's going on? Social economic pressures that led to tension between people who were supposed to have been neighbors found themselves engaging, because they still have went unresolved. May 24th, 1951, a mob of 3,500 whites attempted to prevent a African-American family from moving into an area in Chicago known as Cicero, which is a predominantly Italian neighborhood. Okay? Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson called out the Illinois National Guard to protect the family, this African-American family, and to restore order. But again, there were these tensions. June 19, 1953, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, African-Americans began a boycott of their city's segregated municipal bus line. This effort is believed to heavily have influenced the Montgomery, Alabama boycott that Dr. Martin Luther King later brought in Montgomery, Alabama. But because they did not like the way they were being treated, they boycotted. In 1960, a group called the Deacons for Defense and Justice was an armed defense of African-American men, right, during the Civil Rights League. And they kind of loosely formed a civil rights organization, in Bogalusa, Louisiana. This group was made up of World War II and Korean veterans. They had fought for America. And they gotten to a point where they refused to sit back and allow the injustice that was taking place down in Bogalusa, Alabama, against them and their families. All right? The Klan and things of that nature were very boisterous and unbearing. Now, unlike the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, they decided we were not going to sit back, but we are going to take up arms as we did fighting for America, and we're going to protect our children. All right? They were refused to accept Jim Crow oppression. 1960. May 3rd of 1963, when African-American males in Birmingham, Alabama, refused to allow Bull Connor, who was the commissioner at the time, to any further plague them with Jim Crowism and some of the low-down, dirty things that they would do, they stood up. And Bull Connor had police dogs sicked on them and fire hoses spraying them down. This became a national image that embarrassed America and forced President Kennedy to act. March 7, 1965, 600 Alabama civil rights activists staged a Selma to Montgomery protest, is what I just referred to earlier, marched to draw attention to the continued denial of African-American voting rights in the state. The marchers are confronted by Alabama state troopers whose attack on them at the Edmund Pettus Bridge is carried out on national television yet again. On March 21st, Reverend Martin Luther King led a five-day, 54-mile march, retracted the route of the original activists. The 3,300 marchers at the beginning of the trek eventually grew to 25,000 when they reached the Alabama Capitol on March 25th. After the protest march, Lyndon Baines Johnson proposed, "Hey, in 1964, we need a voters' rights act, because this ain't going to work. We don't need them doing this no more." All right, so they were effective in their protests. August 11 through the 16th of 1965, the Watts Riot, also known as the Watts Rebellion, occurs in the Watts neighborhood of Los Angeles, California. 34 people were killed and 1,000 are injured in the five-day confrontation. Like the many riots occurring during this generation and recent others, African-American people were fed up with unfair treatment. Now, this is out west. This was a consistent problem throughout America, and African-Americans constantly found themselves needing to be out on the front line to say, "No, we're not taking it." July 12, 1967, the six-day Newark riot of Newark, New Jersey, begins and claims 23 lives. 725 were injured, 1,500 people arrested. Again, African-American males were simply enraged by the government's failure to ensure their rights and equality hit the streets. Okay? July 23, 1967, the Detroit riot erupts. Between July 23 and July 28, 43 are killed, 1,189 injured, and over 7,000 people arrested. Strangely enough, many more African-American males across America will assume the same position that we see depicted here. Okay? April 4th, 1968, we know about this. Dr. King is killed, and we had the result of what we talked about extensively on Tuesday, the Holy Week Rising. And within a 10-day period, violence erupted all across America, urban America in particular. Okay? May 17th through the 18th, 1980. This is a very interesting case here. Riots broke out in Liberty City, Florida, near Miami, after police officers are acquitted for killing an unarmed black man. Does that sound familiar at all? This is 1980. The riots, which generates 15 deaths, is the worst the nation has seen since 1967. In Detroit, just a few years earlier. May 13, 1985, Philadelphia's African-American mayor, Wilson Gordy, orders the Philadelphia police to bomb the headquarters of a group called MOVE, a local black nationalist organization, who decided they would take a stand against the fact that they did not believe the government should dictate their lives for them. Well, the bombing leaves 11 people dead and 250 homeless. The event demonstrates the fact that many African Americans clash with government regulations regardless of the presence of African Americans being in government and in office, as the mayor was, this black man, Gordy. And it really speaks to, I'm going to talk about that a little bit more, the need for political education and organization. All right? March 3rd, 1991. You know this, Rodney King and two of his passengers riding with him, Brian Allen and Freddie Helms, were driving west on the Foothill Freeway, Interstate 210, in the San Fernandino Valley of Los Angeles, California, when they had run in with the police. The incident became a prime example of police brutality against African-American males. Later, the police were found not guilty in court and led to a major race riot in Los Angeles, California, where a white man, innocently a truck driver, was killed. Now, what's interesting about this is that this is perhaps one of the first times that a video camera captured the police engaged with Rodney King, and that really incensed and enraged people all over America, because not only in the U.S. but around the world now we're seeing these images yet again of what happened in with Bull Connor back in the 60s. This is in 1991. December 4th, 2006, the Gina Six were six African-American teenagers who were convicted by the district attorney in the beating of a fellow by the name of Justin Barker, a white student at Gina High School in Gina, Louisiana. The circumstances of the charges and the district attorney's actions were seen as modern-day Jim Crow oppression. Thousands of African Americans protested and converged on this small city with a population of only 3,000 residents in the effort to see to it that these young men were set free and that they had a fair trial. It did happen. What was interesting is that the Justin Barker was a Caucasian male who approached these young men that were sitting under a tree, as I understand it. And he put a noose up and told them that they had to move. They couldn't sit there no more. So they had words, and Barker went and brought a gun to the scene. One of the boys snatched the gun from him and whooped his tail with it. Ultimately, all six of them were charged with attempted murder. All those people that went down to Gina, Louisiana, no laws were changed. Nobody went to the state capital of Louisiana and protested and contested the laws that were on the books that allowed the district attorney to do that, which begs the question, what's really going on? August 9, 2014, the shooting of Michael Brown, and we're going to have a guest from this city here, occurred in Ferguson, Missouri, a suburb, of St. Louis. Brown was an 18-year-old African-American male fatally shot in an incident between Darren Wilson, a white police officer. Sadly, Brown was reported to be starting to go to college the week after his loss. This led to rioting and looting of Ferguson businesses, very much similar to the others we saw in these other cities in this place. And ultimately, what happened is those people came to a resolution. And I'm happy to have our guest on next week who will share with you one of the most positive stories that we can gain from this as we answer that question, how do we engage young people in organized protests and not anger and violence. December 13, 2014, the period of America's first African-American president, President Barack Obama, a most troubling truth about the progression of African-American male hostility came out. Beginning with the non-indictment of a white police officer, in the case of Michael Brown and Ferguson, to the lack of white police officer indictment in the case of Eric Garner in Staten Island, New York. A massive protest in the defense of African-American male safety from law enforcement officers resulted in march in Washington, D.C. on December 13, 2014. Missing from the national discussion is the basis of proactive African-American male education and socialization into the greater American fabric. That was missing. All right. October 10th, 2015. Last case here. African-American men and women around the nation gathered on the National Mall to celebrate the 20th anniversary of what was called the Million Man March. Muslim minister Louis Farrakhan, Dr. King's former right-hand man, the late James Luther Bevel, and the former president, national president of the NAACP and Baptist minister, Ben Chavis, all organized a massive march that was intended to bring black men together to atone for their sins in America and bring their families back together and go back to their various neighborhoods across urban America and make a difference and improve the quality of lives. That was October 10th, 2015, when they remembered the 20th anniversary. Here we are in 18. The question is, how effective? How effective? Now, what I want to do is we got our callers in queue here, but the OJs have a message for you just for a few seconds, and they're going to tell us what we need to do.
Don't you know you got to give the people?
got to give the people. All right, you're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. We're talking from the topic tonight, how to heal after 102 years of social tension in America. You heard my monologue, you heard 20 cases where black folk went to the street and said, no, 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 we ain't having that. Pastor Ricky Wallace with us, and my good friend, 1098, a.k.a. Outcast, a.k.a. Professor Outcast, is with us tonight. Welcome, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Okay.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Tell me where I went wrong, gentlemen. You heard the monologue. We got young cats taken to the streets today, and guess what? It's not just African-Americans anymore. There are a lot of angry whites who feel the plight of African-Americans, and I've seen Hispanics as well, and a sprinkle of Asians. They are now saying that they want to help their young African-American counterparts protest. Do they know what they're protesting? Anybody?
It's all depends.
Talk to me.
Well, you know, it all depends. It all depends.
Okay.
You know, let me seek an answer this like this. Well, if it's continuously happening to the blacks, as stated, mm-hmm. eventually it's going to trickle on over to them. You know.
Okay.
Just I hold right there. Just with
okay,
that.
Pastor Ricky Waller, help me with that, my friend. What say you about the status of young people? We see particularly African Americans historically have went to the streets, but today they're still out in the streets, man. And my question, Pastor, is why do they have so much time on their hand, and really are they effective with being in the streets as they have been the last 3 years or so?
Yeah, when you make it, when you're making something available and it's easy access, it's not hard to feed into it or to be captured into it. You know how often I've talked about the trap. I mean, this is something that's true. This is not something that's make-believe. Anytime you have an innocent group of people.
Hold on. Excuse me. One second. Pastor, your voice is kind of muffled. Is there any way you can readjust your phone?
Yeah, okay.
Maybe speak on your phone.
Yeah, okay. What
clear.
About that?
Go ahead.
Yeah,
all right, go ahead. I think that's
Yeah, I'm in a different location. Okay. Yeah, as I say, you know, it's something that's easy access. You know, when you guys don't get up under somebody to get around, you know, there's a trap
right.
that's been set. And you have to understand when it's intentional, that means that you're trying to cause someone to fall. And if you don't understand that, that's one thing. And no, not everybody's going to get caught in it. Thank God that not many people escape, but thank God that a few people miss it. And I say miss it, you know, because if the trap is set for 10 people and they get 10 people, everybody got caught in a trap. But if there's a trap for 10 people and 9 get caught up in it, you know, thank God for that one that escaped. So what I'm saying, it's not to belittle the person that's in the trap, but the one that's not in the trap, started out with the people that got caught up in the trap, should have a heart to say, hey, man, that trap was set for me, too. I mean, it's like sitting back watching, taking notes, being a spectator to the people that's out there. So that's what's causing it to happen, man. I mean, being a victim myself, I know that that's my experience. You know, it wasn't like I was planning to get in the trap, but that was an experience, and it's still happening today. What did we do about it? You know, you tap into the solution. Is that one?
Okay.
Yes.
That's
where it is.
So, Pastor, do you think this is just a African American problem then? When now you have women's groups and other LGBT groups, they are rioting or they're protesting too, so they say, and Antifa, Black Lives Matter. Everybody's out there, you know what I mean? So it's just a combination of us. Is this just a black problem, or who? I mean, what's going on, man?
I mean, they're all out there protesting, which I don't see, you know, what the protesting is doing. But if that's what they're doing and protesting working, if it's working, protest. But as I say, the solution is what I'd like to tap into. I don't know. I don't think I would be protesting. I'd be tapping into the solution. I don't have to think that they have to give me a right to change what's changeable. I can change it myself when I know what to do.
Wow.
You know, and if everybody don't know what to do, that's understandable. Then you protest because that's all you know to do.
Right.
But if you know they got some drugs that they're bringing in, okay, and you know that you don't want to do the drugs, just don't do it. But how simple was that? That was real simple, but it don't go like that if you don't know how to do it. You know, just like going to the store, man, you got them cigarettes up there, and it's got the very kind that you're used to smoking. They made sure they got it for you. But if I decided to change, I have a right to choose whether I should buy it or not. And that's what's going on. We have a right to choose.
Right. That's right.
But do we know how to do it? Most people don't know how to do that.
That's interesting. I'm going to try to offer, before we leave tonight, a suggestion about how we can do that, Pastor. All across urban America,
great.
All the cities that are tapped in and tuned into us, and we had a few cities that in some foreign countries that have been listening to the show, according to the stats from the podcast network. But what's interesting to me, gentlemen, is this. Now, clearly, when you listen to from 1917 all the way up to today, to these protests that have been going on, people out in the street, some of them reasonably and some of them still questionable why and what are you going to accomplish, right? Clearly, African Americans have just reason to be uncomfortable and to say we're not going to take that, right? So I'm not going to take that away from them. But when I think about OutKast, this gentleman by the name of George Soros, who is a filthy rich Caucasian male, I read an article recently that he has invested millions of dollars in the most recent protests, including Black Lives Matter and the Ferguson incident and the New York riots. I mean, the New York situations recently. And I asked myself, what is his investment? What's the interest in his investment? Because clearly, out of all of those recent things we've seen, I can't see how those young people went home and got a better education, how the economic status of the neighborhoods they lived in changed, how their family circumstances have improved. I can't see anywhere how even their health conditions have. I'm at a loss, because, so I'm asking, you know, usually when you put money in something, you're looking for an outcome. So what's the outcome, Alcat? What do you think his outcome is?
Well, you know, the outcome, he came to the income yet. Yeah, you know, basically, you know, that is a question, you know, why? Why perhaps this his form of entertainment, you know, to get a group of people, irregardless of what color, and let them get out there and do what they do. And that's act fools, you know, destroy, you know, pillage and plunder, you know. But I've always said this. When it comes to the white nationalists, Black Lives Matter, and all them, tell you what, take all of them, put all of them in a building, see, and that'll kill a whole lot of them, because cows and coyotes run in packs anyway. As stated, you know, I'm not with the Black Lives Matter deal. I'm with All Lives Matter. Now, I can go along with that, you know, but, you know, I mean, you know, you just gonna stand up. Tell you what, tell God Black Lives Matter. What do you think God would say? What do you think God would say?
All of my lies that
Thank
I gave
you.
Matter.
Thank you. Thank you.
You set me up on that one.
Well, you know, I mean, that within itself,
I appreciate what you're saying, and let me add something to what you're saying. Here's what the babies need to know, Pastor Waller. Second Chronicles 7:14 is correct in its premise. If, watch this, the word if is a condition, and it means under certain circumstances. All right. So let me read that into. Under the right circumstances, my people who are called by my name will humble. That means you can't be boastful, angry, puffed up, ready to tear anything up. themselves, yeah. Watch this, gentlemen, and pray. What does that mean? Be reflective and communicating between God. That's what you're talking about, Outcast. And seek my face. Seek my face, not what somebody has in store for you that's putting money and paying you to be out there causing mayhem. And turn from their wicked ways. Watch this, guys. Then, and we use this in math, if then, the if then principle, right? Then will I hear from heaven, I will forgive them of their sins, whatever they are, and guess what? I'll heal their land. Now, why we ain't teaching that?
Because that's true. You know, that's the way, you know. That's part of the truth. That's the light, you know. Devil don't like lightness, you know. They love that darkness, you know. And this is why, you know, it all reflects back to that also. There is a way to do anything, you know.
Yes.
But
yes.
The thing is this, you know, you got young fools and you have old fools. At the end of the day, as you know, you have young fools and old fools. Now, the thing is this, you know, a lot of stuff can be avoided. I mean, which again, we know you have good police officers, you have bad police officers. But when you are approached or whatever, you know, do what you're told and move on. That anger, I ain't gonna do that. No, see, now you're asking for it.
Right.
And I hold right there. You know, let something else.
Pastor Wally, you were going to say something?
Yo.
No.
Pastor Wally, you
were going to say something?
That's what the text
And that's the thing. And when you read that, it says, if my people that ain't going to get over here, you're not going to humble yourself. Yeah, exactly. And you're not going to humble yourself, and you won't be able to get this information and apply it. But if a person takes that, what he said, and realize that he's talking to his people. Now, one may say, man, I'm doing a whole lot of things, but this is the day that the Lord has made. So if you tell us to rejoice and be glad, I'll be glad to hear something like that. And then I said, well, I can step up right now because it's all about that moment of change. See,
right.
And that's what a lot of us are afraid of because we have a lot of respect for God and we think that if we're doing a lot of things, we can't step up and get inside of his kingdom and apply that verse which you just read. He said, if my people are called by my name, humble themselves and pray.
Right.
And see, that's where the order comes in. That's a starting point for a person that's doing that wicked stuff like I myself was. I started praying and then got a chance to realize that I was sincere and the time brought about change. So what are we going to do for the people that's out there about the trap that we was talking about the 10 people, for an example, that 9 got caught in the trap. One escaped. What should that one be doing? Finding ways and means to reach out and to bring those 9, or 1 out of the 9, or maybe 2 out of the 9, or all 9 of them. Either way you look at it, there's some work to be done, man. And all over the country, brother, I thank you. We got that message that you just spoke. Give my people. Man, that's outstanding.
You know, Pastor, that's when you said that, it reminded me. I'm sorry I cut you off.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yes, and you know, the joy comes in at over one that gets free. You know, they say heaven rejoices over one, man. I believe there's a lot of just one out there that can get free, that can cause other people to realize that, man, a person can get free.
Right.
But, you know, we got to stay with it, and I think that's what you're doing now. So as I heard Outcast say, I'll stop right here.
Well, you remind me of something as you were speaking. You remind me of something as you were speaking. I remember when I was campaigning a couple of years ago, and I went out deliberately, Outcast, to what some people would classify as some of the roughest areas on the streets, because I believe that those young men that was on the corner needed to know how to avail themselves in the government and so forth and so on, right? Well, anyway, we had a couple of barbershop conversations, invited him there. And young man laid into me, and I think I shared this before, and he wanted to know, what are you going to do about the police? And I said to him, now, what police? Because not all police are doing anything. But for the most part, all of them are citizens, hardworking, and they've committed themselves to keep you safe. They put their life on line every day. As OutKast have said numerous times, there are individuals who don't need to be on the police force, okay? That need to be dealt with. And I said to him, if we find those people, and I'm an elected official, in this case it was a councilman, the councilman approves the budget for the police department. They have a lot to say about who is in order and out of order, and there's a process by which they are held accountable. That's what I'll do for you. I'm not going to blow no spoil. I don't want you to think that I want to encourage you to go out here and blow up the police. You understand what I'm saying? Get into a fight and have vitriol toward them. No, I want you to be in order. And if they're out of order, there's a legal process by which they can be held accountable up to and including termination. You know what I mean? But too often people are just driven by anger and irrational behavior. And you're not going to win that way.
Exactly.
Partly why the text suggests that you humble yourself. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly. Exactly.
And again, I don't want to downplay the fact that we got 102 years, gentlemen, of historical evidence that Negro, black, and colored folk got a lot of reason to be angry in America, okay? Let's be clear about that. I'm a student of history, and I don't want to downplay that fact. That being said, is anger going to change your problem? Or is reason going to do that? That's the question. And if you being mad at everybody, white people and everybody else, everybody didn't do nothing to you. Yes, there were white folk that were responsible for slavery and injustice and Jim Crow. But guess what? Today, everybody's not after you. Everybody ain't trying to hurt you. Most people don't really care about you. They live in their lives. You understand what I'm saying? The question is, how can you prepare yourself to live your life? Go ahead, OutKast. You were going to say something.
Oh, no. I'm listening. I'm basically just agreeing with you, you know. I mean, you know, a belligerent man gets nothing, you know. The Bible states in the book of Proverbs, which I don't quote scripts verse by verse, you know, read so much until a lot of locks in. But it's a statement in the book of Proverbs that states, a fool would open his mouth before he get through the gate. And this happens so often, even with your Black Lives Matter so-called movement. They want to talk to the police chief. You're standing up there. You're arrogant. You're nasty. You're belligerent. You're angry. No one is going to talk to you. This is why no one from the police force actually wanted to talk to him. Because of their behavior, their actions, as you stated. This is why. And the guy that's putting up his money, you know, I feel like this. If you got all this money to burn and see people out in the street destroying their lives, getting charges, going to jail, what type of individual are you? That money can inform your investigative crew and go and clean it up. Rather than have idiots out there in the streets doing what they're doing, looting, tearing up. Okay, I'm mad at a white man. Okay, I'm going to tear this business up. Well, guess what? You just tore up a black person's business. And guess what? That black person is not going to be there anymore. They're going to move on. So where is the sanity?
Wow. No, you know, a good case in point was the Gina, Louisiana in 2006. All those people went down there, gentlemen, in that little town of 3,000, and they tell me they rocked the place. I had a couple of friends and my brother went down there. They rocked the place, man. They shook them up, right? And, you know, the normal characters, Louis Farrakhan and Jesse Jackson was down there, guy named Basin on the radio, Al Sharpton, some of the same guys. And at the end, when they came back, they still hadn't changed the laws that caused injustice in the first place. The district attorney should never have been able to put those charges on those young men and try to charge them as adults. They were high schoolers.
Yeah.
But because you didn't, even the Million Man March, when they, all those folk in Washington, D.C., tell me, why shouldn't they have had at least 1,000 go to the Supreme Court with a legal manifesto about what laws need to be changed to improve the quality of life? You understand what I'm saying?
I agree.
Help
sir.
Me understand
yes,
that, gentlemen. why would we do that?
You talking straight now. You talking straight. Don't stop. Keep talking straight now.
I'll tell you why. Because you went there out of emotion and not reason. You really think through that. I never will forget. I was working for the state in corrections, and I had to go that week to Tullahoma, Tennessee, to the academy, and their whole week. And my dad said to me, "You're not going to take off and go down there and support the brothers?" And I remember saying to him, Pastor Wall, I said, "Well, I asked a few of the guys that told me about it what were going to be the result, and they couldn't talk straight with me about that. I couldn't get no clear answers from them. I got a wife, and at that time, a little baby I got to feed, man. I ain't got time to be playing games with people."
Hello.
You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
And here we are, 20-some years later, and I still don't have an answer. What did it benefit? Now, I know some of the people that organized it, they got money. They said they raised offerings. They had buckets, and people were putting bills, 150s, in the buckets. But it was like a free will offering, Outcast, so the government didn't tax it. Help me, Holy Ghost.
Right, and they loaded their pockets of 90 damn fools. Excuse me, friend.
I wasn't I can't think you understand what I'm saying. But where'd the money go? Where'd the money go?
Exactly.
That text you were referring to, Outcast, I believe you were making reference to Proverbs 17:28. It says, "Even a fool, when he holdeth his peace, is counted wise. And he that shutteth his lips is esteemed a man of understanding." Help me, Holy Ghost.
That's right.
What about that, Pastor Waller?
I think you say even a fool.
Even a fool, when he shut up and be still. You can even give a fool credit for being wise when he knows to shut up and sit down somewhere.
That's right.
That's pretty decent. Yeah, man. Because you utilize the word of fool, man. That, to me.
That's what Proverbs 17:28. That's what the text says.
That's right.
Exactly.
Talk about the wise man and the fool. Proverbs.
But that's what the blessing is, you know, is knowing that that's something that's accurate, and it's a lot of that going on. People are still being a fool. I mean, I can identify with that. But when you take and you acknowledge that, you know, you got something to work with. But just think of the people that don't even know, and that's the thing about it. You know, I'm right there with the people that don't know. That's my concern. I'm cool with the people that know, and thank God for them being able to know. But, man, but to not know, man, that's a hurt thing, brother. You know, where to put myself is consider myself being still out there in that trap. That's what I like to see myself and saying. Consider yourself being out there where those are. And that's where I'm at. I guess that's why the compassion is so the way it is with me. You know, I'm just thankful that somebody cared enough to say something positive to me, you know, while I was out there. And I think that still need to be pushed, you know.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Definitely need to be pushed.
You make a great point. You make a great point, and that is, and I want to be clear that I don't want any African-Americans to think that I don't recognize the gravity of the negative experiences historically. That's a historical fact. You can't erase that. In fact, that's an indelible part of American history. But all I'm suggesting tonight is you've got to be able to move on. You've got to be able to move forward. Otherwise, you know, you're stuck in your anger and your frustration all the time.
Woo.
All the time. And, you know, that's got to be a miserable situation, man.
I'm sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
sure.
Go ahead, Pastor.
Yeah, I'm sure it has to be a miserable, man. When you're miserable in any area of your life, I mean, and change is available. My goodness, brother. How do I get there? What steps do I need to take to experience a little change in that area? As miserable as I have been, you know, give me a chance again, continue to look back had it not been for the scripture that gave me a chance to look back, then I would say, no, I can't look back. But Lamentations 3:21 states very clear. It says, and this I recall to my mind. Therefore have I hope. Man. There's still hope for others, man. There's still hope for others, man. And as I drive down the street as I'm rolling right now, I still believe that there's hope for somebody. I don't know who it is, but I know there's a lot of people still in the trap, man. But this could be their day. You know, if they hear it, if the conversation is going on right now, you know, they may be able to say, man, I'm one of those persons that he was talking about when he says, if my people,
you
know,
my
called by my name. And he may hear the voice and say, he's talking about me too. So I had to get to that point, Outcast, that he was talking about me too while I was right in the midst of my stuff, man. You know what I mean? I still heard that word, and I say, man, he said, this is the day. In other words, I don't have to wait until tomorrow and triumph. I can triumph today. And, man, that day came, man, and as foolish as I was, I stepped out on faith and tried it. Good God Almighty, I'm talking about it, man. From that day on, brother,
I said from that day on, man. Sound like you took it personal, man.
Man, I did, man. I got to be honest with you, man. I took it personal, and I was upset when I found out that I had a choice, man. You know, man, you're right, I am, man. I'm realizing that it was personal. It was personal. I got to admit that.
Gentlemen, we're at the top of the hour. Let me do this. Let me run this little commercial and tell people about our traveling series. And on the other end, I got a question I want to ask Outcast. I think he is qualified and best positioned to answer this tonight. Is that all right with you, Brother Outcast?
Yes, sir. We'll see. I'll try my best,
sir. Okay, we'll find out. All right, give us a few minutes on the other side of this advertisement.
Hey, they call me Pook. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up and be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets. Day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. And we have Pastor Ricky Wall on with us and my good friend out of Nashville, Tennessee, Brother Outcast, who's joining us as well. And on the other side, we promised that we're going to raise a question to him. Now, Outcast, in the advertisement there, the lady said that she was talking about perceived threats to African-American male. Here's my question. Who is at blame for this threat or the general plight throughout urban America? Who should we hold accountable for that? They feel threatened.
Feel threatened in what manner? And plight.
Well, think that
I'm
the police
plight.
Out to get them. Uh-huh.
Okay, now, doing the mass migration of Negroes from the South to the North during a period of time, which you have talked about in the past. It was basically a threat from your local police. What they were doing, they were taking blacks, locking them up, giving them bogus charges, and running them out working mines and other things in that nature.
True.
You have, who that thing was, Woodrow Wilson. He was sitting up there. He knew what was going on. You know, they wanted to keep it kind of subtle. See, but you keep doing wrong for so long.
Right.
Round it out. Let me round it up like this. They was all right as long as they was down there, you know, locking those Negroes up, giving them fake charges, putting them in camps and having them working in mines and stuff like that. It was all right, but as soon as it got to the white boy, got to that white man, they beat him to death. Guess what? They want to stop it. See, a lot of stuff that goes on, even talking about urban America at this point, a lot of people that are in these powerful seats and things of that nature, irregardless of what color they may be, they know what's going on. But see, as long as you are down there doing it to a certain group of people, it's all right. All right, now, boys, but now when y'all cross that line, we're going to have to get rough on you. We're going to stop this.
So
now,
let me hit something you said. You suggested that there were some black people in political office, positions of influence.
No, I'm talking about as of today.
That's what I'm talking about today.
I'm talking about today. Yes, go ahead.
There's some black people.
Yes, they know.
As mayor, as senator, council people and what have you. And yet, black males, many of them, not all of them, feel threatened. And my question was, who's to blame for that plight, that perceived threat? You understand what I'm saying? I would think that, if you were my senator or my representative, you would come to me and tell me how to eliminate my threat and how I can feel less threatened. Is that unreasonable?
No, that's reasonable, very reasonable.
Okay. So what's going on? Why you ain't got that, Pastor Wallace? What's wrong?
Yeah, well, still looking for the solution, man. I mean, you know, who's to blame? I think that blame game is pretty strong. I think when a person, as you said earlier, when he gets personal with a situation, and I keep that same intensity, because if I don't, I'll lose heart, you see, and that's something I strive not to do today, is because, you know, when you look around, you be honest with yourself, you look around, it looks like there is no hope, and then I listen to certain people talk a lot, and to hear what they're saying, if I didn't know what the scripture says from my learning, then I would give up just like that because of what I hear them say.
Wow.
You know, and I've heard a lot of things being said about there's no hope, it's too late, you know. And to hear that, it's like, why still go even to the church house if the church don't have anything to offer, you know. And it's appropriate, you know. It's appropriate to be able to look at it in that manner because it's simple. You know, it's like, okay, you go into the church house and people go in there and they're enjoying themselves and things like that. But what about the purpose? Why is it that we go into the church? Do we go in there just to say it's Sunday again? Or do we go in there and say, let's get something to work with and we can take it outside with us? I mean, it's just, and that's why I say losing heart, man, could easily be done if a person such as myself look at what I see. And that's why I know if they walk by faith and not by sight. Because looking at what I see, I can agree that it looks like there's no hope.
Pastor, you keep on stepping on my toes when you talk about the church, man. Hurt my feelings. Now, what you want me to do? I'm already preaching. I'm reading from the Bible. What you want me to do, Pastor?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Not only read the Bible, do what it says.
Well, you, know, you hard on a man. Well, I'm telling you, you hard on a man, Pastor.
Tell you what. Tell you what, though.
What's that,
you What's mentioned it. You know, about the whites and things out there, you know, in this different, these different protests with the blacks and things that, that you see, the white man know history.
Okay.
And the white man know that eventually, if it keep happening to the blacks, it's going to come to the whites. This is why they fight so, a lot of them get out there and fight so hard to try to help. Because they know that it's a domino effect. It's a rollover effect. That answers your question concerning that. If you, if you're continuously doing this to this race of people, you're going to get around to doing it to your own white people and your own people of other different nationalities and things of that nature. This is why they do what they do. Going back to Martin Luther King, injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. White men learn that's what they have starting off. Let's go back to slavery for a minute. What they call them? Slavs. They were enslaved at first.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But you know, they couldn't recognize that when they ran off, a lot of people said that. This is why they went on and took the black man, not only blacks, Indians, and every doggone thing else. We can identify you.
Okay.
And again, going back to abolitionists, this is why they were fighting so doggone hard. No, you enslaved them. Yeah, you work them to death, you kill off all them, and then you're going to come back and put us back into slavery. No, we ain't going for this. And
I'm Hold on, Outcast. Wait a minute. Slow down, man.
Emotional with the truth. Tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Well, you're right, but
this
listen.
Is why.
Listen, Outcast. John Brown came to Frederick Douglass, and he told Frederick Douglass, you need to fight with me. If you're really about setting black people free, you need to join me and my men. You know what Frederick Douglass said? Frederick Douglass said,
It's too many of y'all and a little of me.
Yeah.
Who else would, since you was on John Brown, I forget. Well, anyway, it'll come to me because all this coincides with that. But even though John Brown did what he did, how many slaves were set free? Not
none.
One.
Not from his actions. In fact,
again,
they hung him.
Again.
They hung him, Outcast.
Exactly.
He wound up getting hanged, and other people were brought before a firing squad. Now, the point is, Douglass was saying that that is not a palatable solution. But what we need to do is to avail ourselves to first, we got the 13th Amendment, right? We need to avail ourselves to the 14th and the 15th. The 14th guaranteed you rights of citizenship and being treated humanely. And the 15th allowed you to vote to put people in office to represent your interests. Frederick Douglass understood that you can swing. You understand what I'm saying? But you need to know who you're swinging at. Don't be swinging in the dark.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, the race isn't given to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, Pastor Waller. But to the man that knows how to endure until the end.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. That's
and these little cats are not lasting past 21 to 25.
No.
In urban America. They think they're getting
along.
Why?
Because they're still blinded. You know, Reverend Doctor, they're still blinded.
Absolutely.
With that negativity, you know, instead of having instead of thinking rational, they think irrational, like violence and all the violence going to give you. No, violence is not going to get you anything. Violence will get you more of what you don't want if you're not careful. Going
It'll
back
get
to you,
you
talking about Frederick Douglass. Exactly.
Right.
This is why you're going back to the amendments and things in that nature. You know, this is why that was there. Now, that was a very good point. You know, you had a lot of your black freedom fighters. I forget his name now, but he decided to do his thing on the day of the eclipse and things in that nature. You know, to look good that did him. You know, but you know he was an educated man. But at the end of the day, what did it cost him in the blacks that he had up behind him? All of them got killed, and they took him, cut his head off, I think, and hung it on the fence.
Right.
You know, and again. What they did Well, they sent a message. Okay, you try. This is going to happen to you. And then you wonder why these white folk get up out here and join marches and things, and then just some of them be out there because they just like they would say the average urban Negro is out there to loot and steal. This is why a lot of them join, just to see what can they steal. You know?
You know,
they're not out there for good purposes and means. I hope so. I'm sorry.
No. You raised a great question. And one of the questions I have on our Facebook post is, to what extent can youth of urban America change the socioeconomic plight of their communities? And to your point, sir, when you not allow anger and irrational thought to drive your actions, you can think clearly, right? What the text say, even a fool, when he learned to be still and be quiet and listen, can be counted wise.
Right.
See? But the question is, when are we, Pastor Waller, as the text says I read the text in the beginning of the monologue in 1 John 2 and 14. And if I might just write quickly, it says, I have written to you, fathers, because you have known him that is from the beginning. I have written to you, young men, because you are strong. I want to put a pin right there. Can you imagine what happens, Outcast, when old cats like you and Pastor Waller take your wisdom and experience and implant that in the heads of these young cats running around looking for trouble in all the wrong places, looking for happiness in all the wrong places, and tell them that you have strength, and because you are strength with the word of truth and guidance in you, you can overcome anything, you can change the world. Can you imagine what that would be like, Alkan?
Hey, it would be beautiful, and it would be magnificent, you know. And I'm quite sure, you know, that God, you know, would put a lot of glory around it, and also his, so no one can harm you.
Absolutely. Now, here's the deal. Here's what I suggest tonight as a step. All these young people who got the energy and the mind to go out, and in their mind, I believe they generally want to protest. They want to change. But somehow they get caught up in the hype, and it turns into a destructive riot. They don't benefit themselves or nobody else. All they do is cause mayhem. Those people...
Correct.
Pastor Waller, if we open some of these churches that are closed all week long, with the exception of Sunday and Wednesday night maybe, or Tuesday night for Bible study, are y'all walking with me so far?
Yes, go ahead.
And we get these, borrow a UPS truck and round them up. Round them up. And bring them to these empty churches. Help me, Holy Ghost. Bring them to these empty churches. And put something in their head, man. Tell them how to be organized. Tell them how to strategize, how to set goals that are time-phased and measurable, how to link objectives with those goals that are clear and succinct with an outcome, and how to behave day by day in the actions that are necessary to reach to meet those objectives that help them meet those goals. Can you imagine what happens in the church house then, Pastor Waller?
Oh, man. Yeah, without a doubt. I can even imagine.
Now, we ain't hooping. And we ain't spitting and kicking, Outcast. But we teaching then, see?
That's right.
Yeah.
Huh?
I agree. Yes, sir.
Amazing.
Maybe it's just me, Pastor Waller. Maybe I'm just crazy here. But somehow
I'm not crazy.
That...
perfect the same.
I don't know why I'm thinking this. Maybe I'm just crazy. But somehow I believe that may help channel this young energy in the streets, man, into something more productive.
Right. Yeah, you're right on target, brother.
I don't know, man. Brother Gordon, Daniel Gordon is watching on Facebook. How you doing, my friend? Question or comment? You've been hearing what we're talking about. Question or comment? Just shoot me a question thread if you like, and we'll respond to it. We've got another 14 minutes here before the show is over with. I got another question I want to ask Pastor Waller this time. He thought he was going to get away from me. I got him, though. I got him. He ain't going nowhere. I got him. You there, Pastor Waller?
Yeah, I'm here.
So the question, Pastor Waller, is what is the difference based on what we've been saying? Can you articulate the difference in a riot and organized protest? Can help us with that tonight before we leave. What's the difference in coming out to the streets and just rioting and being organized in your protest? You got a right to protest, but do you have a right to riot? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I guess you're talking about a peaceful protest. If that's something that I would think you was talking about, a peaceful protest. How would you do a peaceful riot? Right. So I see.
Ask that again. Wait.
Yeah.
I'll answer that. I'll take a roll walk.
He said, "How you do a peaceful riot?" Wow.
Okay.
Go ahead, Outcast.
Now you ask the difference, you know, between a protest and a riot. A protest,
yes, sir,
is peaceful, and a riot is not.
Wow.
What Martin Luther King was doing, he was protesting, they had schools and things of that nature set up for them to come in and learn how to keep themselves composed and not going into a violent rage and things in this nature. That's the difference between a protest and a riot. A protest is peaceful and a riot is not, you know, because you got your blacks and your whites down there. They want to break the windows out and grab television, radio, shoes, $6,000 or $7,000 shoes and suits and run up the street. And it kills everything.
Right.
No.
Well, you make a great point, man. You make a great point, and that is, it's okay, and it's legitimate for you to say if there's an issue and you can identify it, right? And you have again, we got 102 years of history, man, of legitimate issues that black folk have in America. But to just come out and say you want to just start tearing up and cutting the food and turning flips, I mean, black folk don't want to see you doing that. Go sit down somewhere.
No.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're sounding like that.
Right.
Baby, go sit down. I'm sorry. This is Mickey that's joining us. Thank you, Mickey, for joining us. I appreciate you. She's in Illinois, I believe. We appreciate her tuning in with us. But, you know, gentlemen, as we get ready to leave, we got 11 minutes here, about 11 half minutes. I think it's important that I want to make sure that it's understood from tonight's broadcast. My intention is not to tell young people that you don't have a right to voice your pain or when you have a problem. I'm not saying that. I'm simply saying there's a right way, Outcast, and a wrong way to do everything.
That's right.
And when you are out of order, you make it easier for others to justify further oppression of you when you're out of order. I know you're mad. When I was a supervisor at a youth detention facility, you know, we had little young guys, Outcasts, they cock strong, man. They take their shirt off and put grease on so their little muscles could. And I was a younger man then, but I ain't about to wrestle with you, man. Look here, boy. Hey, look, don't make me have to slam you. You understand what I'm saying? But my point was, I made it a point to try to de-escalate. I understood that they were locked up. They were taken from their homes, wards of the state. My job was to keep them there and to try to, you know, feed them and make sure they paid their dues and what have you. But the point I'm trying to make is, I often said to them, look, man, you don't want me to have to call this extraction team in here to put you in this little 5x5 room, because it ain't going to be nice when we do.
No.
So let's talk about what you're angry about and what can we do. You got a right to file a grievance. If me or any other staff is doing you wrong, you got a grievance. You can file a grievance, but You fighting everybody, that dog ain't gonna hunt. Because if you whoop all of us, all these staff that I got working under me tonight, I'm gonna call the state troopers. And they're gonna come in here with Metro Police. If they need to, they'll bring the National Guard with them. But somebody's gonna back you up. And that ain't gonna turn out well.
So how can you win?
You ain't gonna win.
No.
Right.
You ain't gonna win. At the end of the day.
No,
and that's where we have to, I believe, lovingly, caringly embrace our young brothers and sisters now, Outcast, because little girls are getting ruthless now.
Sir.
I mean, wow, man, what
you got two women prisons in the state of Tennessee.
Yeah, they got two of
state women
wow.
prisons. They got they
man.
Have two. They got one, Mark Lutcher, down in Memphis. And if these
that's
young ladies keep on,
wow.
they're going to have another one in some other part of Tennessee.
Wow. Wow. That's where it is, man. That's where it is.
You know.
Listen, you're listening to Talk Straight. Our topic tonight is how to heal after 102 years of social tension in America. It exists. We recognize that. But we also know that if you come swinging, you know, there's no guarantee you're going to last.
Exactly.
I'll repeat it again. The race isn't given to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. But if you got the sensibility to do like Proverbs 17:28 said, you can be a fool and get credit. You just shut your mouth. Huh?
You know what I mean? You know, going back down through history, it was Nat Turner that was on my mind.
Nat Turner. Yeah.
In his rebellion, what happened.
Right.
And everyone
well,
that was with him, and they killed him.
Nat Turner went along with John Brown. Frederick Douglass said, I ain't doing that, man. And you told us, tell us what happened to Nat Turner again. What happened to Nat Turner?
And
all they
cut his head off and then hung it up on their pole. So he hung it up. Cut it off and hung it up. But, you know,
and how many slaves got free?
Not a one. Nothing.
Now, Outcast, somebody going to say, y'all some punks, man. Y'all just scared to go to war.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, I take that. Well, I tell you what, this punk is going to keep his freedom, but if you keep that irrational attitude that you have, you're going to be in prison probably with 100 years if they don't get you death row, and then you'll be saying, man, I should have been listening to Outcast and the Reverend Waller and the Reverend Doctrine. I still had my freedom, man. I was a fool. It's too late. Too late.
Wow.
Try to come back on the appeal.
Yeah,
you know, this is what you do. Try to come back on the appeal.
Whew.
You know? I mean, like you say, that anger, you have to get past that because, you know, it's stated. You can't think when you're angry. But once you settle down and collect your thoughts, you can move forward.
Yes, sir.
I mean, and I'm going to hit this Black Lives Matter thing one more time. I'm surprised having any of them called up in here. They run around to my Black Lives Matter. Well, I tell you what, you go to some of these people right here in Nashville, where their sons been gunned down and talking about Black Lives Matter. They'll look at you and say, what? What do you mean?
Right.
Matter. If your Black Lives Matter, my son wouldn't be dead.
Right.
You know?
By a black person.
And I hold.
Black person. We got 5 minutes, man. What you gonna do with it,
man? You gotta utilize every moment count. Yes, sir. Every moment count.
Next week, we hope to have. We've been reaching out to them. We hope to have them in place. Two guests on. One is a counselor, community counselor in the St. Louis area, and the other is he works with Save Our Sons, which is the outcome of the Urban League, the Ferguson, Missouri Urban League, that took the gas station that ignited the Ferguson riots, burnt down to the ground. They donated it to a man. They built a beautiful place there, and they're doing some great things. We expect to have them on with us next week telling us. And I know that in every city, Outcast, that we're talking, particularly right here in Nashville, there's hope, and there are people with answers. What we really have to do is to tap into that. Sometimes they don't get the spotlight in the media. and they don't get their names wrung out there and whatever. But there's hope. And that's what we have to do. We can't allow our anger to close our eyes and shut us down from finding the good that's out there and the good that's being done that's not being publicized. But we have to be the voice piece for it. So that's what we're aiming to do next week, is to spotlight those two individuals. Vanita Pittman is the community counselor. She has a master's degree in guidance and counseling, and she's been doing some great work there. And this other brother who is there as well, who's been working there in the St. Louis area, Mr. Tidrell Stevens. He's the workforce development specialist there with the Urban Lead in Ferguson, Missouri. Want to highlight him. And I hope that you all will tune in with us there and share. Call in. We want them to answer the questions for you. I'm gonna try to not do as much talking, Pastor Waller, but allow them to talk, you know, and share with us some things that work. Because there's some answers out there. You know, just like you said, Pastor, there's solutions, there's answers out there. So, gentlemen, man, golly, look at the time, man. Look at the time. We got about three minutes and 20 seconds to go. Final thought there, Outkast, right quickly?
No comment. I think I've said enough.
Hey, God bless you.
No,
man.
Jim Brown, no Nat Turner. Can't do that.
I ain't going out like that. Okay.
No.
Pastor Waller, wrap us up here, Doc.
Yeah, man. We appreciate everyone, man, who was involved tonight. You know, the Word of God said, "I will keep in perfect peace those whose mind is on the deed." Because trust in Him, you know. As long as you trust in Him, keep your mind on Him, no matter what's going on in your life, walk in expectancy, and He will put things in order. Glory to God.
Help us, Holy Ghost. Here's a special message to a son as we leave. Join us next Tuesday, 7 o'clock p.m., for another live episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dock. We appreciate you joining us tonight, and as always, we will look forward to engaging you here on another live episode. This is a special message to a son from a mother. And with this, we're going to leave you, and we'll see you next Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. for another episode of Talk Straight. On behalf of Pastor Ricky Waller and my good friend Outkast, we're going to end with this here tonight.
Well, son, I tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor bare. But all the time I's been a-climbing on and reaching ladders and turning corners, sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you turn back. Don't you set on the steps, 'cause you find it's kinda hard. Don't you fall now, for I still going, honey. I still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair.